This is Will Smith from Artificial Brain, Buckshot Facelift, and Afterbirth. You're listening to the Toilet of Hell Radio, tough guy.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
You're listening to the Toilet of Hell Radio Show. We got a very special guest today. If you've ever read toiletofhell.com, which I assume that you have, you might have encountered a band called Artificial Brain, of which they're tagged in like something like 47 total posts on the site. We have their vocalist, Will Smith. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So you've got some very exciting, you've got a really exciting weekend coming up. You're going to Montreal, right?
Ooh, awkward. I'm not.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah. Well, yeah, here's how it works, man. I'm not allowed in Canada for legal reasons. And that happens with some people who are in bands, messed up their touring schedule. So our friend Paulo Poguntalan is going to be playing that festival this weekend and singing for the band. And, it's not like we just pulled him out of our hat. He sang on three songs on the first album. He's filled in for me in Canada before. He's a lifelong friend in death metal. So we have all the confidence in him. Those guys are actually rehearsing with him tonight just to make sure he solidifies all the parts. So until I get my legal situation, figured out, that's how it has to be.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. You mentioned earlier that the band is practicing tonight, and I just assume because you're the vocalist, like you don't have to worry about that stuff. They're the nerds that have to like carry the equipment and worry about like hitting the drums right or playing the right riff.
Well, I to an extent, you're definitely right, man. I'm not going to put on a front, but I've always told the guys when we're getting ready to play shows, it helps me that just muscle memory of doing the vocals and memorizing the lyrics. I can do that in my bedroom with the lyric sheet, but it's a lot better to go through the songs live with the guys and get used to the volume of everything. So I do emphasize rehearsing, but we're taking advantage of, we're kind of turning a negative into a positive this weekend with me not being able to do that. So Paulo's filling in for me for Artificial Brain, and my other band, Buckshot Facelift, is playing a show on Long Island here this Saturday. It's going to be our record release show because that band has an album coming out now. So, we're just kind of giving up, and we figured also we had to say we know Toilet of Hell has always supported us, so we want to put this interview on priority. So since Paulo is singing this weekend, I kind of feel that this interview and they're rehearsing and everybody's firing on all fronts, man, you know?
Yeah, man, that's awesome. We are big fans of Buckshot Facelift as well. Ulcer Island is the new record that's coming out, and I listened to a lot of it. It's really interesting for one thing because it doesn't stay the same from one track to another. What you wanted to do with that record?
Well, it's tough to say, man. I guess we ended up writing a whole bunch of songs, and some of them were more short, grindy, power violence songs, and some of them were a little bit more long and like death metal influenced. And when it came time to record, we kind of got the idea, how are we going to group these songs so it doesn't just sound like a big salad? And we got the idea to make the album gradually progress from like more of a simple grind-based thing into like more of the more complicated songs at the end. And the lyrics reflect that a little bit too, if you read the lyrics, because the lyrics turn from like kind of sort of political, social commentary and everyday situations into like more of this, my drummer's creepy, introspective, mental searching and stuff like that, you know? So it reflects how the songs get a little more complicated and such too, you know?
Yeah. And also, I guess it might've gone under the radar for some folks, but, y'all put out, an EP, for Halloween as well, that probably has the best cover of Pet Sematary I've ever heard. What was the, impetus for recording that one?
Well, thanks a lot for the compliment. My drummer was the original one that brought that cover song idea to the table a few years ago. And, cover songs always get put on the back burner with us because we're writing new material and stuff. And we had this idea to maybe do this little prelude EP, because that Bucket the Moon EP is supposed to be a prelude to Ulcer Island. And it was recorded in the same session. So we wanted to put it out around Halloween, time it, a few months before this album dropped. And we said, what better cover song than this Ramones you know, Halloween, you know, horror movie themed song, and we went for it. And I, you know, to the other guys in the band's credit, I feel like they nailed it. I just did the vocals, you know, so I feel very proud of working with those guys on that, you know.
You know, anybody that's heard your bands has heard, you've got just an amazing guttural voice that has been honed for years with like slam projects. And I feel like Artificial Brain definitely has some elements of slam to it, but it's a more, you know, intelligent package overall. If you know, I hate to use that to describe music as dumb or smart.
I know what you're going at, and a lot of slam bands would pride themselves on the word ignorant. So I think people, as long as people don't get too personal about it, they shouldn't get offended at that. That's a fair characterization. I mean, I was in the band BioLich, and there was definitely slam parts, but we had some weirdo parts too, and some kind of forward thinking, whatever you want to call it, parts, man. But you know, I've always just been the guy behind the microphone. I can keep a beat on drums. I can't play a blast. You know, I just do vocals. So I kind of go with the flow, and I try to pick bands that I can work with that everybody's scope aesthetic, man. You know, I mean, Artificial Brain, that guy Paulo was filling in for me this weekend, is the guy who hooked me up with them originally back in the day, because we were mutual, you know, we had mutual friends, and they were looking for a singer, and it just meshed. And one of the best parts about Artificial Brain, we always say, you know, amongst each other, is that you know, you have this kind of like black metal influence and this tech death influence. There's a lot of different stuff going on, and we don't all necessarily come from the same backgrounds musically, you know, in terms of our personal CD collection or whatever, but you know, we have a good mesh, I think, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You I was reading a little bit about this new record and the kind of the lyrical influence behind it. Basically, you're imagining a future in which robots are basically the new higher form of life. Humans have been left behind a long time ago.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Like, how did you come up with this? What was influencing your thinking?
Okay, well, I was looking forward to this interview because I wanted to. I don't know if the right term would be clear up a misconception, but just, you know, the way some people have been talking about the album, it is a concept album. I don't know if it has a linear story like your, you know, Operation Mindcrime or one of those type of classic concept albums, but you know what I mean? Because if people start reading the lyrics front to back, it might not appear at first. There's a lot of running themes. There's a lot of things I wanted to remain kind of ambiguous, and people can determine. But basically, it follows. We said at first when we set out to do the lyrics and the album a few years ago, we wanted to do something about artificial intelligence. We had already done a lot of kind of space and cosmic themes and all these things on the first album. We wanted to move towards that area of science fiction with artificial intelligence and robots. And again, bringing up Paulo, he worked a little bit with me on some of the ideas. A lot of it was based, believe it or not, on Matt Groening's Futurama cartoon series, which
is
brilliant.
Awesome. And
yeah, and explores a lot of these AI themes in very down to earth ways, if you really think of it. So there was like a few dozen episodes that Paulo suggested. I watched. I didn't watch necessarily all of them, but you know, and there was a lot of discussion that went back and forth. And then growing up, I was also a big fan of Isaac Asimov's novels, the Foundation trilogy, and all that. So and then you also get into you know, maybe the Terminator series and mm-hmm. all these different pop culture things that influenced it. And then in my own head, a lot of it has to do with there's a lot of things now where people are talking about implanting your consciousness, downloading it onto a computer, and you know, your consciousness can live on in a file and be uploaded into a new body one day, and that sort of thing. So there's parts where we could be discussing that, or we could just be discussing a robot itself having consciousness, or some gray area in between. You know, I tried to leave a lot of ambiguity and if I said that right, in gray area, you know, on the album. But it definitely explores that future, and explores a kind of dystopian future in which robotic beings are trying to find themselves, and there's not much to be found. That's pretty.
I know you mentioned a couple of movies and shows in there. What are some of your favorite sci-fi movies and shows?
Well, obviously the Terminator trilogy, the first two Terminators, I would say, are definitely some of my favorites. Total Recall, getting away from Schwarzenegger, if we will now. And I mean, Metropolis was great, and that was actually something that influenced the album a little bit. I don't know. Kind of have
the 1920s.
Yes, 1920s. Absolutely.
Thing? Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah, and we have a new T-shirt that was designed by Chaney from the band Entheos, and I don't know if she designed it with that in mind, but it kind of like imitates that artwork a little bit in my mind. So I thought that was great. I'm trying to think what else, man. Dune is always a great one, man. I mean, a lot, you know, just a lot of the classics, man. I can't necessarily speak for the other guys in the band, but I'm a big fan of the old school science fiction and horror movies, the Hammer films, and even going back even further, Universal films. That's all stuff that was played for me by my uncle growing up, you know. So just this fascination with space and the unknown and things like that has always driven me in music and in lyrics. And with Artificial Brain, when I joined the band, they said we're going to play space death metal, you know. So that was the goal, man, to put all this stuff into it, you know. So definitely a lot of those 80s kind of iconic, you know, pop science fiction things. Isaac Asimov. I read Isaac Asimov's, one of his autobiographies growing up before I ever read any of his science fiction novels. And I felt like that gave me an interesting kind of like look insight into what he does. Ray Bradbury, a lot of the classics, you know, things like that I read growing up, you know, have always been in the corner of my imagination.
That's awesome. You mentioned briefly the idea of uploading, or at least the concept of uploading your consciousness. You know, it's something that I guess the futurists, or more likely the very wealthy futurists of our society, talk about doing a lot. And it's something that kind of fascinates me from a morbid angle. What are your thoughts? Do you think that there is a future in which people can upload their consciousness to the cloud, and what happens when it gets there?
Maybe it's just me, but I'd be surprised if there's not. I'd be surprised if the technology isn't being worked on or isn't there already. I think there's so much that goes on that we're not privy to, you know, and that is. You know, and without getting too far into the conspiracies and things, but yeah, I definitely think that's a possibility. And like you said, it's probably for the wealthy elite class, and I don't know, man. It's obviously, it makes me uncomfortable. it's not something I think is cool or pleasant. I don't like the ramifications of it. I wouldn't be interested in it myself at all. And one of the things I tried to put, getting back to the lyrics in a way, is what a robotic being or somebody in that situation whose consciousness has been through this digital process or whatever you want to call it, this formatting process, what the human abstracts of emotion and thought would be to them. And that's what scares me the most about this concept of uploading your consciousness, is that you're losing something human. You know, there's something between the lines about being human that you can't compute, you know, whether you call it a soul or whatever it is. There's something there that I think we're going to lose if we start getting into that, or if they start getting into that, whoever's going to do that.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. You know, you're a sci-fi fan. Have you ever read I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream?
I love the title, but I'm going to admit to you, I haven't read it.
I highly recommend it. It's a short read by Harlan Ellison. Essentially, it's humans, the last humans on Earth, are eternally tortured by an immortal computer. 1967 short story. So he's pretty ahead of his time on this one.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. That's very ironic. I was just talking to somebody at work today about how a lot of these classic science fiction works from the 60s, they're almost coming true today. You know, you got to look at it in a little bit of a metaphorical way, because they're obviously not going to come true. You know, literally to the word, but yeah, like you said, you know, the computer torturing people on Earth, and you know, and you know, we're going to be controlled by giant television. That was a big theme in a lot of these things. And nowadays, everyone's got a little portable television in their hand. I'm talking to you right now on one. You know, it's kind of true. You know, these things are coming true. It's like somebody mentioned once, like, did the people who created the Jetsons, did they know what the future was going to look like? Or did the people who created jetpacks and different things watch the Jetsons when they were kids? You know, it's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg, you know?
Yeah, there was a lot more. It seems like things like the Jetsons, the vision of the space age were a lot more positive than anything that we have in our collective imagination now about what the future would look like. You know?
Oh, yeah, man.
There was the idea of flying cars and food pellets, and now there's the idea of ruling overclass and, mass extinction.
Yeah, I think that speaks to, historical events in our collective imagination. I mean, art reflects life, and that cartoon is art, you know what I mean? Look to what, just in music, who could picture death metal in the 60s? Maybe there were some experimental people on the fringe doing some crazy stuff that was similar to death metal, but, who could picture bands getting popular or, all these different things, man. Times change, and unfortunately, it's a sign of the times, man. I think, the people like the cover of our first album, Labyrinth Constellations, Paolo Girardi from Italy painted that beautiful painting. I can't take any credit for that. He painted it, but it did a lot for us, man. And it's futuristic, visceral, violent warfare with no human qualities whatsoever. I think people want to look at the future like that more than this, utopian Jetson thing.
Bring it back to planet Earth and in the present, or at least the recent past. Artificial Brain had a song on the CBS show Elementary. How'd that get hooked up?
Oh, man. I can't remember. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head right now. I don't have it in front of me. But there's a guy who's a writer on Elementary and on the show Limitless, and he's a fan of Artificial Brain. And he, call it product placement, call it what you want. We've been included in those shows, and it's done a lot for us, and it's great. We're very thankful for that support, and it's gotten a lot of new people into the band, and it's been a wonderful experience, and it's just a total kind of potluck thing, man. Like this guy, this guy is a writer and is a death metal fan and kind of just made it happen and worked us into it. There's not much more to it than that,
That is fucking awesome. Did it freak out your friends and family? Like, hey, by the way, I'm going to be on this CBS drama.
Yeah. I mean, of course. I mean, I've been singing for death metal bands, for like, I don't know, like almost 17, 18 years, whatever. So it's like the first credible thing I had to show my parents. You know what I mean? Like I'm on TV, it was great, man. Yeah, of course. And then, there's still like a YouTube clip floating around and we can show it to people. And Lucy Liu is there. Lucy Liu actually said on the Elementary, Lucy Liu said, Artificial Brain. So Lucy Liu said our band name. I mean, what can I say about it? I can't brag about that because I didn't set it up. I didn't make it happen, man. It's a great little thing, man. And, years from now, we'll be able to show people that and tell people the story. And it did a lot for the band in terms of free promotion. So, what can I say? Some people might think it's kind of lame or whatever, but we didn't go fishing for that or anything. It just happened, man. And the guys supporting the scene.
I think you got to be pretty fucking jaded to think it's lame to have, like, your underground death metal band be on a mainstream publication of any chance.
Come on, man. Toilet of Hell, you got to deal with jaded underground scene people all day, right?
Oh man, I would fucking shit my pants if like Lindsay Lohan said the words Toilet of Hell in any media whatsoever.
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, it's fucking great, man. It's nice to be acknowledged. And it's not like this Kanye West thing where some celebrities are just wearing metal shirts and they don't even know the bands or anything. It's somebody who genuinely appreciates the music and is a metalhead, so it's great.
Hell yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you because you've got a super, super tight delivery with your vocals. I've heard a couple people mention that you have some kind of background in hip-hop as well. Is that true?
Well, not like any professional background. Just I'm from Long Island, New York. Hip-hop is, huge out here, obviously. And not all metalheads listen to rap. But, in my neighborhood growing up, it was a real diverse neighborhood. A lot of white, African-American, Puerto Rican, all different types of people in my school. So reggae, hip-hop, all that stuff was going on. And it wasn't abnormal for a white kid who was into metal and hardcore to also listen to hip-hop. And then around 17 or 18, I started freestyling with my friend. You just freestyle rap when you're hanging around the parking lot drinking beers or whatever. You know what I mean? It was easy. And then, after a while, somebody gets a microphone and a computer and you're recording songs and you know, I've recorded a bunch of songs, and over the years I've taken it more seriously at certain times than others. And I've recorded, you know, like a mixtape here and a few songs. If you go on, like, I have a SoundCloud that has a bunch of songs, and I'll still keep recording songs, you know, through the years as I get inspired to write them and stuff. But the metal has always taken first place. You know what I mean? I got three death metal bands I sing for right now that play shows and do things and you know, whatever. So the hip hop, it's part of me, man. I love hip hop just as much as any other type of music I'm into. And I'll always rap, and I'll always be ready to freestyle or battle people, you know, just for fun. But death metal takes you know, the first priority for me. That's but yeah, awesome. Hip hop's just part of it for me. You know,
I keep, you know, we on this show we've talked about a few times. There are rumors that we keep hearing that somebody's going to make basically an updated version of the Judgment Night soundtrack and try to put rappers together with metal bands again, which, you know, was the only time I think it was really successful.
Tricky territory combining rap and metal, man.
It's dangerous. I don't know. It's like communism. Like, this is the ideal area that we could go to, but it's just been done so poorly.
It's good in theory.
I know where you're coming from, man. Yeah, good metaphor. Yeah, in theory, on paper, it looks nice, man. Yeah, they did it good. I'm not going to act like this is a popular opinion at all, especially outside of the East Coast, but I'm a huge fan of E-Town Concrete. Always have been. Always proud to say it, and I get tons of shit for it, so you don't even have to like be like, oh yeah, Will, that's diverse of you. Like, I get it, you know. But like Biohazard had some songs. There's some times where it worked and some times where it didn't, and a lot of the times it really doesn't, man. And we learned that in the late 90s and early 2000s, especially hard.
I used to see E-Town Concrete all the time. I lived like 10 minutes away from Birch Hill, so they were like a local band for me. A lot of Mandibles and Punch the Walls.
Yeah, in New Jersey, that's like, you know, like them and Furious Five are like hometown heroes in New Jersey, man. Yeah.
What do you think the reaction is going to be to this record? A couple of reviews have already dropped. I know that our dude Stockhausen just completely jizzed all over it. What have the reactions been so far for you?
Great music, hate the vocals.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding around. I'm just kidding around. I'm actually used to that, but for some reason around, we're getting, I mean, you know, I can't complain. We're getting pretty good reviews, man. You know, people are enjoying what we're doing. Colin Marston is a very solid producer. Profound Lore is a great label. And the other four guys in my band really know how to play their instruments, man. So it makes it very easy for me, you know, as the guy that does the growling and screaming, you know. I'm really proud of the album. I'm really proud to work with these guys. And yeah, you know, we're getting good reviews. So it's really great to see that people in the scene are behind us and still supporting us, you know, because we did that first album, and there's a lot of times where, you know, when bands come back on the second album, they don't always enjoy that same support they had. So it's great, man. You guys, Toilet of Hell, are supporting us, and it's great, man. We're looking forward to getting back on the road and playing some more shows, you know, especially shows that I can play.
Hell yeah. One of the things I wanted to have you do is, because we don't devote nearly enough coverage on the site to it, is I wanted you to give me, and especially the listeners, a couple of recommendations for Essential Slam.
Essential Slam. Oh man, don't get me started, bro. How much time we got?
We got all the time.
I always go on because being from Long Island, you could trace Slam, you know, right back to Internal Bleeding, of course, and Suffocation and Pyrexia. Eternal Bleeding was the ones that kind of just owned Slam and waved the flag for it as a genre before anyone else, man. And that's like home. Their first demo, the address says Huntington Station, which is the town I've always lived in, man. So those are, Eternal Bleeding is straight up hometown heroes for me. So you gotta get down with Eternal Bleeding, Extinction of Benevolence, and Pyrexia, Sermon of Mockery. Which was, I can't get into the exact line of stuff right now unless I had it on paper, but there's some people in throughout the years in Pyrexia and Suffocation have had lineup switches, and they started around the same time. And Pyrexia is, if you like Suffocation, you're kind of like Pyrexia's first album, Sermon of Mockery. And they're coming out with a new album soon with Alex Cohen on drums and Jim Beach from Tomorrow's Victim on vocals, which is going to be their best album yet. Pyrexia is an Essential Slam band. And when I say slam, I'm talking about like this kind of old school New York style death metal slam. I know nowadays it's evolved into this new thing, which all right. So you want to know new school slam? I would talk about Dysentery from Massachusetts. Those guys, Blue, the bass player, played with Internal Bleeding for a while, filled in for them, and he's really, I talked to him about this, Blue really gets slam, and he gets the new school style. I don't know what people, nowadays people say beat down, slam, deathcore, I don't know what all these genre names are, but Blue knows a lot about, you know, all these different new styles, and he appreciates the old school classic New York style, and Dysentery is the band that really brings it all together in one. I love Dysentery, man. Cognitive, obviously, from Jersey, they really bring hard slams, but you can't fault them as tech death musicians. Their new album's great. I make a little guest appearance on it.
Hell yeah.
And I mean, I'll go into the old shit, man. If you look up a band called Disfigured from Long Island, you can find their stuff on YouTube. They were amazing too, because they had really catchy slam parts, but they were kind of technical, and the bass player and drummer were ahead of their times. A band from Texas that came up around the same time as Devourment that doesn't get a lot of shine is Prophecy. And Prophecy had a brilliant album. I think it was called Foreseen, Foretold. And it came out around the same time as Devourment's first album. And it's like beautiful, kind of like 90s classic death metal. And then they just throw in these slam parts that are great. And the vocals, it's like Dying Fetus, but with more of a sense of melody. It's great stuff, man. Obviously, Dying Fetus is great.
I'm really into this Prophecy thing. I'm from Texas. I've never heard of this band before, and I've got to check them out now.
Oh yeah, great band, dude. Because they you can tell that one of the members must have been in a really classic thrash and death metal, because they have that slam and that kind of Dying Fetus vibe. But then they go into some really quality melodic interludes and stuff. It's good stuff. Prophecy's great, and they put out some new stuff. Maybe just one or two songs or a demo a year or two ago. I know they're definitely getting back together. Them, oh man, who else, man? Who else we got? So many good bands. Well, there's the Merciless Concept from Long Island. I wouldn't call them a new band because they've been kicking around forever. Not forever, but maybe the last 7 or 8 years. And the drummer, Taekwon, I work with him actually, and he plays in Sworn Enemy, another New York band, and two of the other guys in Merciless Concept play or tech for stuff, or do like guitar tech stuff for Suffocation, or play for Suffocation, whatever the case is. So those guys are always on the road. But the Merciless Concept, I just heard a new song today. The drummer played me a little premix, and that's good slam. When the Merciless Concept drops their new stuff, or if you want to research their older material on YouTube or whatever they got, man, the Merciless Concept is a great Long Island slam band. And if people want to get into the history, like the very primordial roots of slam, see, some people from Long Island don't agree with me on this, but it actually, the roots around the same time as it started on Long Island, it started upstate New York, and there's a band called Disgorged, like Disgorged with the ED at the end, the past mm-hmm. tense, and Morpheus Descends,
who are
back together. Yeah, those bands, if you listen, they're not slam like your chug-chug hip-hop slam like nowadays, but if you listen to what those guys were doing, there's definitely that, like, roots of slam death metal going on, man. Them shit, dude, I could go on for days, man. I'm outside of my car right now. If I was upstairs with my demo collection, we'd be going all day.
You really should just do, like, a primer for slam for people, or, like, a mixtape or something, because
man.
I think that you would blow some minds with this.
I did some articles, and I wrote a little bit a few years ago, and I stopped, not purposely, but I stopped because I picked up with Buckshot and with Artificial Brain so much that it was harder for me to deal with. I work a full-time job outside of music and all that, so it was harder for me to write and concentrate, but I've had it on my mind to do kind of a roots of slam thing sometime, man. So you definitely inspired me with that, man, because I'd love to kind of show people where it comes from, and that it's not all just about, you know, getting ignorant and chug riffs. There's a lot of attention to writing catchy riffs and using different rhythms and different things like that that goes into some of the more complicated bands, you know.
We always got space on the website should you ever want to get the itch again and feel like writing.
You got a place to publish if you want it.
much appreciated, man. I'll keep it in mind, man. You know, maybe I'll keep that in mind when we're in the van coming up for some of these shows, man. I'll jot down some ideas.
Hell yeah. Jordan, is there anything that you wanted to jump on?
One last question for me. In a lot of promo pictures and in a lot of live videos, you're wearing sunglasses while you perform. Have you ever considered wearing like sunglasses where the eyes fall out on slinkies, or like Homer Simpson style where the glasses have eyes painted on them?
No, never. I don't. Maybe not for artificial brain. Maybe I would do that in another band one day, man.
Yeah, I got Halloween show.
Yeah, I got to check out Artificial Brain once when you played Austin. You had a move on stage that I don't think I've ever seen before. It was kind of like a symphony conductor movement with your arms. How did that one come to you?
That's just natural. That's just what I do, man. I mean, you know, you saw us live. I'm a pretty big dude, man. I'm not super agile. I'm not going to be the guy that's jumping off the monitors and crowd surfing and doing all crazy stuff, man. I move. I get into the music, and that's how it comes about. You know, I mean, I don't know, dude. it's a natural thing, and you know, it's just when we're up on stage as the singer, as the front man, you know, you want to project some sort of energy and project that you're into the music. Nobody's going to get into it. My personal philosophy is nobody's going to get into it if I don't look like I'm into it. You know what I mean? So that's just how I get into it, is I feel the music, and I try to act like we are putting on something bigger than just the sum of its parts. You know what I mean? So I feel it. And when I'm up there, I do feel it, man. There's times where I'll have times where I kind of blink out for a minute. I get lightheaded, and I kind of, everything slows down for me. It doesn't happen every show, but it'll happen in the middle of a song every once in a while, man. And it's just pure euphoria, man. With, you know, it's something you can't get off drugs or drinking or anything, man. And you know, that's what it's all about, being into music and stuff, man. So those motions and movements I do and all that, that's what it is. And the sunglasses, that all started. I wear eyeglasses. I always have. I wear them all day until I go to bed at night. And on stage, you know, it was always either I take off the eyeglasses and I can't see anything that's going on stage, or I wear them and they could fall off, or I'm pushing them out because I'm all sweaty. So with Artificial Brain, when we started playing shows, I got these big sunglasses that cover your whole eyeglasses. It's something that like older people wear, you know, like glaucoma shades or whatever you call them. And I started wearing those. And then you get sweaty, right? So they slide off. So the next show, I had a little band that you put on your sunglasses to keep them on. And the next thing I know, a local website, Brooklyn Vegan, is writing the singer of Artificial Brain with space goggles. And it caught on. Now all of a sudden, everybody's saying space goggles. And it fits with the theme of the band, right? You know, so it evolves. So, you know, now I got like lights on them. And, you know, it's just for the theme of the band, man. It's to give people. So I don't have long hair. I don't have tattoos. So I can be a big, intimidating dude with futuristic goggles on, and it works. You know, it works with my eye problem.
I think it works real well. I think we're gonna have to wrap things up in just a minute. Is there anything in particular you want to share with the listeners?
I just want to say thanks a lot to everybody who's supporting Artificial Brain. We're enjoying a lot of support from Toilet of Hell and from other sources, and from all the fans and from all the bands we play with, promoters. We're playing a lot of shows coming up, up and down the East Coast. And we are in talks right now for another North American tour this fall, with hopefully more dates on the West Coast and places we don't get to often. And we are also going back and forth and trying to get over to Europe and beyond, man. We know there's people asking us for it, and we definitely want to do it. You know, we haven't forgotten. We're all guys that have day jobs and different things going on, and we're trying to work it out, man, because that's our dream. And we'd love nothing more to come wherever people are listening to this and play for them. And it's just fucking great to be in an underground death metal band that's getting this much support from people, man, and to be playing with these guys, you know. That's all I could really ask for, man. I've been playing in death metal bands since I was 15. I'm 34 now. And this is the best it's ever been for me, man. And also, you know, we got that new Buckshot facelift album coming out tomorrow. It's coming out April 14th. And I'm also doing vocals for a band called, you want to talk about old school slam bands, look up Afterbirth from Long Island. They were around in the early 90s. They got back together a few years ago and then parted ways with their singer. So I'm singing for Afterbirth now, and we got an album coming out on Unique Leader later this summer. So that's all my shout outs, man. That's pretty much it.
Good Lord, you're a busy dude.
Yeah, it's underground death metal, bro. It's my religion, man. I've been doing it all my life, man. I love it, man. Thank you so much for you guys supporting it.
Dude, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Anytime, man. Anytime.
Nudity. It's great, man. It's natural, it's freeing, it's what your body wants. Unfortunately, the man tells us that we gotta cover up our disgusting bodies with clothes. It's such bullshit. Fortunately, we're here to help you fulfill your societal expectations with a very special contest from Serial Killer Shop. Serial Killer Shop is a web store that specializes in horror movie and serial killer themed t-shirts. So whether you're looking for a Friday the 13th shirt or a design of John Wayne the Cowboy with John Wayne Gacy's clown makeup on, they've got you covered. And we want to give you your very own t-shirt from Serial Killer Shop. You will win the shirt design of your choosing if you just follow these simple instructions, okay? Number one, like Serial Killer Shop on Facebook. I've included the link in the show description. Number two, tell me the name of the dog that supposedly convinced the Son of Sam killer to start murdering. Number three, send me the answer at my email address, that's toiletofhell@gmail.com. I'm going to select the winner randomly from all of the correct replies. So good luck, and send me that email. And very special thanks to Serial Killer Shop for helping me clothe you gross nerds. We haven't watched a movie together and, you know, talked about our feelings and our experiences and our hopes and our dreams afterwards. So I thought we'd bring that back for this episode. What do you think?
I like how you say watch the movie together, like we're cuddled up on a couch, sharing a blanket, eating a bowl of popcorn together. It sounds nice. It sounds cute.
See, like, my girlfriend is just, like, an avatar for you. She's a placeholder. That's what it is.
So we're going to get to the point where you're looking at her and she's going to be speaking, but you're going to be hearing my voice coming out of her mouth.
Exactly. It's awesome. So you picked a movie for us, and we're back, and we just watched it, and we've got thoughts. The movie. Please tell us a little bit about it.
The movie, skipping over whatever horrible Christian movie that we said we were going to watch like 4 months ago that neither of us could find online. So I chose something the exact opposite of whatever that was going to be. Satan's Little Helper. This is a movie that I came across somewhere in like maybe 2005, 2006. I think I was looking up through Google just masks from horror movies, like different characters, and for some reason, this mask from the movie and the movie's title just stuck out to me, and it was a direct-to-DVD movie, and it was kind of hard to find for a long time, but I managed to come across it, and I really enjoyed it. Like, it's a horror comedy, but comedy is not quite the right word for it. I think maybe it has humorous moments. It's not, like, scary movie or something where it's total slapstick goofball stuff, but it's a slasher movie with funny moments.
I guess that's fair. It seems to be, it's about as serious as you can get for a movie that takes the breaking off point from a fictional video game.
Yeah, so let's go back and tell the story a little bit. There's a 9-year-old boy named Dougie Woolley who's obsessed with...
He fucking sucks. This kid fucking sucks. We've been over this before. I've got opinions about children and that I don't like them, especially in movies. But this is one of the most egregious, horrible children in all the movies that we've seen.
Yeah, I think children in horror movies is just a super overdone cliche and trope where they're just as stupid as can be and annoying as can be, and this kid is the absolute worst, to the point where I think they wrote in that there's something like mentally wrong with the character because he's just so incredibly stupid. But so he's obsessed with this video game called Satan's Little Helper, where he is pretty much a sociopath helping out Satan hit babies and hurt dogs and stuff like that.
From what I can determine, this movie was put out in 2004 and was fairly forward thinking for its time because the mechanics of the game look similar to like Angry Birds, and that first of all, the UI of this game is absolute trash. It was made in Microsoft Paint, but the little Satan's Helper guy, he launches forward and causes a string of destruction, like a mousetrap or some shit. So. Not that important in any way. I was watching really carefully because this game was bothering me for some reason.
That's because it's just a cartoon. It's not an actual game.
Right, right, of course.
So it's Halloween time, and Douglas lives on a small island. I think it's in New England. I think it was filmed in Maine. And his sister Jenna is coming home from college to celebrate Halloween with him. And Dougie is a little creepily obsessed with his sister, to the point where his mother...
I'm a little creepily obsessed with his sister, too. If you know what I'm saying.
I know. His mother, who's played by Amanda Plummer, who you might know from Pulp Fiction and So I Married an Axe Murderer, makes a joke about incest. So it's that type of movie, which is kind of like the winking, nodding, yeah, we know this is weird.
Yeah, so, that's Amanda Plummer, Honey Bunny, from the coffee shop scene in Pulp Fiction. If I'm sure everybody listening to this has seen that at least once. So you got an idea there. We've got some star power.
Yeah, I think all the budget from the movie went into getting her to act a couple days on it.
Yes, absolutely.
So Jenna comes home, Dougie's all excited, but she didn't tell him that she's bringing her new boyfriend Alex to Halloween with them, and Dougie's all upset. He runs off, and he finds someone dressed like Satan who just committed a real-life murder, and Dougie, being the stupidest character in the history of anything, thinks it's fake and is super excited to meet Satan and wants to go around helping him commit crimes and murders.
I mean, as you do. I think I had the same reaction that Dougie did when his sister brought home her new boyfriend, because this guy also sucks. The movie was made in 2004, and for some reason this guy is dressed as a bully in 1992 with the long stringy hair and a newsy cap backwards. And he was creepily obsessed with his dad being mean. Just mentioning that constantly with no context whatsoever.
Yeah, he looks like he could be in the Spin Doctors.
Ooh, that's a sick burn.
So throughout most of the movie is Satan, who has a really cool mask. I think it's worth bringing up. It's for being an original mask, it's really well done. There's detail to it, and the character Satan never speaks in the movie. He never says one word, but still manages to get a lot out of having his face covered and his body covered and having those speaking roles, just, I guess, emoting and showing different emotions, whether it's like humor or creepy, scary. I thought it was well done with that.
Yeah. A lot of the humor seems to come from him being like a tremendous perv. In one scene, he's going through like a bin of dirty panties. Like another, he's honking boobs. He's he's definitely a horny Satan.
He is, and throughout the movie, he kills a bunch of different people, and it's a back and forth. It's not over the top violent, but there is an organ ripping scene that does get kind of creative, I suppose.
I've watched like four horror movies in the last couple of days, so I'm trying to remember which organ ripping scene that is, but I feel like I didn't believe it at first. I thought it was an elaborate joke because the organs looked like gummies.
Oh yeah.
Okay. That's the right one then.
That's the one. Yeah. Dougie's father comes home, is in the movie for 2 minutes, and then he stabs him.
Should we give spoilers here? Like, I don't know how far we can go with this.
That's not a spoiler. The guy's in the movie for, like, literally a minute.
Okay, fair.
So I don't think that counts as a spoiler.
But yeah, I swore that was, like, gummy intestines, and they look pretty tasty.
Overall, what did you think of the movie?
I thought it was a C-plus effort. I think. And I didn't know what to expect out of this. And I came away, I guess, with an appreciation for Honey Bunny. Mm-hmm. I did like the, as you mentioned, the mask. I thought that was pretty sweet. And I hated the hell out of this kid. I hated him so much.
I think it's the biggest hindrance of the movie is he's so incredibly stupid and so incredibly annoying. And I think overall, most of the characters in the movie are pretty stupid.
Yeah, no, every one of them. the kid's sister also, for some reason, keeps slipping in and out of accents. I'm not sure if that's intentional or not. I think
it's intentional because for Halloween, she's supposed to be like a Renaissance lady. And she's like, her character is like a drama actress too. So I think that's somewhat intentional. And it's worth pointing out that the sister Jenna is played by Catherine Winnick, who people might know from the show Vikings. She's one of the main characters.
I have not seen it, but I've heard it's pretty good, especially for a History Channel show that caters to the white supremacist crowd.
Well, when you put it like that, I don't want to watch any more episodes, but yeah, it's pretty good.
I mean, you ever seen Sons of Anarchy?
Thankfully, I have not, after a former coworker once described the show as Sons of Anarchy.
Okay, that's awesome. There are some weird relationships in this movie. The mother-daughter relationship is exceptionally strange in that it seems like they're just a little too comfortable around each other. Like, the mom is trying to tart up her daughter with the costume, like trying to cake more makeup on, show off her tits more. It's just, it's a little touchy-feely in a way that's kind of wrong.
It is, but like that's, I think, the funny tone of the movie. I mean, in the opening scene, the mom says she was stoned when she came up with her Halloween costume. They make the incest joke. Yeah. So I think if you look at it through that lens, it's kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, it's being silly.
And I'm not sure if this was like just lazy writing or, you know, it was intentionally stupid. But the relationship that the daughter has with her boyfriend is that it's not actually her boyfriend. This is somehow their first date, that they're going to this island together for Halloween. That was weird.
Yeah, it was lured. They both live on the island, so it was more of a, like, yeah, let's go together, and we kind of like each other, but not yet. So I think it was just an excuse to get them both to go to the same place without having any sort of real relationship.
Gotcha. Yeah, man, there's a couple of scenes in there that I think we should talk about without getting too much into spoiler territory. Okay. This movie is available on YouTube, by the way, for free. Faux free, if you want to watch along with us. In the parking lot of the grocery store, the kid and Satan are just... they've just stolen all kinds of shit. And then he's commanding Satan to basically push him into people, giving point values for each person that they run into. This is the same conceit from The Toxic Avenger, and that the drunk kids are getting points for hitting, they're declaring points for hitting kids or disabled people. It's the same thing. So the kid is, it's pretty great. They hit like a pregnant woman and then a blind man immediately, so they get bonus points out the wazoo.
And a baby in a carriage.
Yeah, yeah. This is a really diverse parking lot that day. So props for that. I thought that was a lot of fun. Also, there's a scene in which the mother is being dragged across a Halloween party by Satan that is actually slightly tense. I think that was one of the better moments of the movie. She's all wrapped up in plastic and it's difficult to breathe. Those were the highlights for me personally.
Yeah, you know, it's a low budget movie. It's somewhat funny. It's, you know, cheaply made. It doesn't look like it was something that would be released in the theater. Like the film quality is a little bit cheaper.
Oh yeah,
But you know, overall, I get a kick out of the movie. It's not like a fantastic watch, but it's oddly enjoyable, especially if you're with a group of people.
Fair enough. I watched it alone and, like, exhausted, so it might have been the wrong moment for me, but it was still enjoyable, so I recommend you folks, if you want to know exactly what we're talking about, go to this weird streaming website. It's called YouTube, and type in Satan's Little Helper. That's Satan's Little Helper, not Santa's Little Helper or Santos El Helper.
Yes.
Man, I tell you, I watched The Void last night. JWG wrote a guest review for us last week on the site. And I had heard, you know, rumblings about it. People were kind of talking about it like it might be kind of a hype thing. Reading his review, I definitely was intrigued, so I went to check it out. That's probably the movie of the year for me so far.
Really?
Oh my God, yeah. It is a great horror movie. It's very much in the vein of The Thing or In the Mouth of Madness.
Okay.
And with a healthy dose of like Hellraiser and like Resident Evil 2, the video game.
Interesting. Is there a lot of jump scares in it?
No, it is not a jump scare movie.
I'm sick of those.
It builds on tension and it does violence extremely well. And it has like a Lovecraft mythos to it that it explores slightly. There's cultists and ancient gods. I really can't say enough good things about this movie. I highly recommend everybody check that out. Watch, the movie we were talking about first, and then watch The Void.
So, how would you stack The Void up against Get Out?
I liked Get Out. You saw that movie recently as well, right?
I saw it about a week ago. I liked it too. You know, I'm the type of person who like gets real shy around hype. Like the more people like something, the more I don't want to watch it. And I've always kind of been like this, but I think Get Out lived up to it. And it was different from the hype I was reading. And, I enjoyed it, but now that you're saying how good The Void is, I might have to check it out as well.
So Get Out was good in that, it took a lot of horror movie tropes and kind of like put them on their head because it was no longer, the traditional story. It was exploring, the horror of race relations in America, from a perspective of your being, on the receiving end of all of this, all this power against your control. I thought it was great. I'd say that was an A movie, like grade A. The Void is A+. Wow. So do with that what thou wilt. But everybody got to go see it. I'm just telling you.
Well, it's that or the Fast and the Furious movie.
I'm a little behind, man. I've got to catch up on 6 Fast and or Furiouses. Is that like Joint's Chief of Staff, Fast and Furiouses?
I think you're going to be just completely lost if you don't watch all of their 8 movies.
I saw the first one at the theater, and I was like a child that was in prime target demographic to be like blown away by this, and I still thought it was dumb.
Explosions and cars and boobs.
Yeah, man, like all of those things are pretty good, but I was like, yeah, this is fucking dumb. I had a friend that swore by Tokyo Drift, but I never got to check that one out.
You drifted away.
Yeah.
Is he still a friend?
Yeah, I haven't talked to him in years, I'm afraid.
So you Tokyo drifted away from your friendship after that?
It's true. It's deep and true. Have you ever seen any of these movies?
I've seen the first one.
So, I mean, like, we're missing out on 6 Fast and Furious, like, in between the fate of the Furious.
I mean, I've seen XXX. That has to be, one of the sequels, more or less, right?
Probably. Did you see the sequel with Ice Cube?
I did not.
No, that's the only one I've seen. I think I was missing some important plot points.
Explosions, guns, guy yells things. I think you got it.
Yeah, it's like getting into the Steven Seagal au revoir.
Netflix is just full of Steven Seagal movies that no one's ever watched.
Yeah, man. You can kind of like carbon date these movies by how big and bushy his goatee is.
Oh, good. You said goatee. Okay, I was worried.
I'm still waiting on the goddamn Steven Seagal energy drink. Nobody sent us one. I've tried to buy one. There was one on eBay briefly, but it went for like $25. If anyone has the hookup on, was it Asian Flavor?
Asian Experience.
Asian Experience. If anyone knows anything about the Asian Experience, it's Steven Seagal, a real-life Asian man.
Don't Google Asian Experience on your work computer.
Why? What could possibly be wrong? Oh, crap.
So many pop-ups, so many viruses.
Actually, I did it just because, and it's there's a restaurant in Taft, California called Asian Experience.
Oh, delicious.
It's 5 stars, man. Like, looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Pad Thai, very nice. And free advertising.
Going to image search for Asian Experience, roughly 11 results down is our Steven Seagal energy drink.
Wow.
And roughly 8 results down is a picture of Guy Fieri.
Do I want to know about his Asian experience? I don't think I do.
Man, he'll take you to Flavortown.
Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Toilet of Hell. You can follow me at 365 Days of Horror. You can follow Joe at Joe Threshingkill. Make sure to like us on Facebook. Make sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. It really helps us out a lot. We're trying to grow the show as much as possible, so it's really an easy way you could help us. And good luck in the contest, and I hope to see a Satan's Little Helper shirt up there soon.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.